Hi, everyone, and welcome to Out of the Gray, a podcast by Standard Imaging. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast, leave a like, and share with your friends, family, and colleagues to help these messages continue their reach. Without any further delay, let's jump into this latest conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Out of the Gray, the podcast where we discuss all things radiation oncology and medical physics. Today, joining me from OCSRI in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, Liz Hyde. Liz, how are you doing today?
Oh, great. I'm very happy to be able to be on the show for you too. So thank you for asking us to do that.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So before we get started into the main topic of today's episode, if you don't mind introducing yourself and give us a little bit of information, a little bit of background about how you found yourself in radiation oncology, medical physics.
So my background is a radiation therapist, and I graduated in 19 blah, blah, blah. Let's say that.
Perfect.
In radiation therapy school from OU. And I started working as a therapist, and in a few years, I moved into the manager role. And then I became over the imaging department at the hospital I was in, and then was there for about 15 years, and then took the job that I'm in now. And I've been here about 17 years almost. It'll be 17 years, and I am the director of radiation oncology, imaging, special support services. So in the special support services realm, I oversee our volunteers and patient experience program, as well as I have marketing and I have our cancer registry. So those are the things that I get to work on, and those people I get to work with day in and day out. But my heart is radiation oncology. I didn't get into the field because of any particular person or cancer diagnosis in my family or a friend or anything like that. I just happened to go to an allied health education class at OU, and I heard about it, learned about it, and it interests me. And that's how I got started. But of course, since then, it has touched me and my family in so many ways. So that is a little bit of background of me and how I got to OCSRI.
What an amazing introduction. We greatly appreciate all you do for the field. I know it's a labor of love, and it's one that we're so grateful to be able to put a light on here Out of the Gray. I know that OCSRI is mostly is the topic, the majority of a topic of our conversation today. So I'm excited to learn more, a little bit more about the clinic and all that. But before we do, you recently presented at the SROA conference. And I'd like to touch on that for our listeners about your presentation, how that went, what the topic was, and how you're feeling about it now.
Yeah, we very, very much were honored to be asked to present at SROA. And we also were asked to present at the CRAD users meeting. And so we presented a similar topic at both on our transition from robotic-based linear robotic-based stereotactic treatment to linear accelerator-based stereotactic treatment. And the efficiencies that we gained, as well as the different hurdles we had to overcome as we moved that direction, and the reasons why, and the staffing piece, but as well the administrative piece and the cost issues associated with robotic versus linear accelerator based, but then making your staff feel comfortable when they were used to robotic based as well. And so there are a lot of components of those different things that we covered. And we really showed that our volumes increased and how many patients we were able to treat a day with stereotactic. We were 5 or 6 patients a day when it was on a robotic-based system. And we can, you know, we have treated up to 30 isocenters a day on one machine, linear accelerator-based. So it's definitely been hugely impactful. Our volumes are 7 times what they were just probably 4 or 5 years ago. It's also because there's a lot more things that we're treating stereotactically. So that's part of it. But the big part of it is the amount of time we can do it in. Whereas, you know, one isocenter, we can treat that in 15 to 30 minutes, no problem. And That would not happen on a robotic machine. It would be an hour, minimum of an hour.
Important parts of the journey from point A to point B when it comes to transitioning away from one technology and into another. So the decision gets made to steer away from the robotic SRS and into the linear accelerator SRS land. What does that look like in the terms of readying the vaults and the facility itself?
It's always a project and it's always a process to go through that construction phase. Some of the things we learned, though, is as the first time we put in the motion management system, where we installed the cameras and the monitors are not the same place we did the second time, and they're not the same place we did the third time. So I think the third time was the charm when we found the right spot for those cameras and where it was best for not the cameras that are mounted, but the ones that the therapists actually use and visualize and change movements on, and where was the best spot in the room for them to lay eyes on that while they're laying eyes on the patient. So those were some of the things that we learned, and now we have to kind of go back and say, how do we get the other rooms set just as well as that one is? It's always a work in progress. But those are some of the hurdles we went through. And then you potentially have downtime as well, because since we were putting in a linear accelerator, we had just put one in, but we were getting ready to put in another one. So we wanted to be able to have more than one machine where we could do stereotactic on in case, the machine went down. So we put in a matched machine. And so not only were we upgrading one of the machines to stereotactic capability and adding C-Rad to it, we also were installing another machine right next door. So it was definitely a time of stress for the staff. And then we went on the next year to install a machine, and the next year to install a machine, and the next year to move a machine. And so I have been told that I'm not allowed to ask my leaders to move or add a machine for at least 12 months. So I think I need to kind of give them a little bit of a break.
I'm sure that is it's a it seems to be a difficult growth process, but one that I'm sure provides excellent results when by the time it's said and done.
Oh yes. I mean, we just are very proud of the way that we take care of our patients. And I know there's a lot of places out there that do just as good a job as we do. But we also do just as good a job as they do. And I would set us aside for against anybody. Definitely quality care of our patients here with our physicians, our physicist, dosimetrist, therapists, nursing staff, all of them.
Undoubtedly. So, in the next step of the process, you've now got the space sorted, and you've got the Linacs kind of shuffled around, and the new equipment installed. What's the learning curve look like for the staff in moving from a robotic SRS to a Linac-based SRS program?
Oh, there is a big learning curve there. And it's more trust than it is learning. I mean, it was kind of touch and go with the therapist for a while, as far as were they going to trust that? Was that going to give them the information that they felt comfortable with turning on the machine, knowing they're the ones turning on the machine? And I mean, although the physicians, physicists, they were all part of the decision-making process, it's new. We have to learn it. And there became a point where you kind of had to turn off, tear off the band-aid, so to speak, because they really only wanted to use the technology C-Rad had to offer on the stereotactic and IMRT patients only. But C-Rad has the ability to set up, you can set up every patient on it. And since then, we have definitely said, okay, this date, we're going to be using it on every patient. And they were like, what? And so, but it was because if, we're not doing, When we first started, we didn't have the volume of Stereotactics that we do now. I mean, when we transitioned, it was 6 or 7 patients a day. So, I mean, now we have 18 or 20 or whatever, but then we didn't. And so, in between time when they weren't using it, they were forgetting it. And then it would have to be warmed up. But the advantages of the system is that you don't need to have marks on the patient. And if you trust it fully, you don't even need to have tattoos for the patient. So we have moved at one of our locations to no tattoos, no marks. We use it on everybody. And this main facility, we're still doing central axis tattoos, the 3-point tattoos, for just original, just initial shift, not original, but initial shift, but no marks on patients anymore. And so if I was a patient, I'd be, really glad. I remember back when I treated patients, that's head and neck patients, and you'd be leaving with marks all over your face and electrons. I mean, electrons, you still kind of have to do that because you're not going to be treating them with the C-RAD motion management technology. But it really has been a patient satisfier as well. It's quick too. And another thing we've come to find out is that the patients set up pretty easy. I mean, easier than I think they would. And it's not, it really has decreased our setup times, and it decreased the amount of time that patients are on the table. So, no marks, fewer tattoos, on the table less. What can make a patient happier? Having cancer, right? I mean, that's what we wish we could take away.
Amen. That is so true. But to have these small benefits to offer a patient pool is without a doubt, I'm sure greatly appreciated. When it comes to indication specific treatments, are there some indications that this technology would be used on without miss, or is there a certain patient population that maybe it doesn't fit so well for?
So we use it for setup of every patient, but to actually be watching the breathing and that kind of thing, that is really for our complex patients, our stereotactic patients, potentially some IMRT patients. Those patients, we're doing a lot of stereotactic brain patients, a lot of stereotactic, I wouldn't say a lot, that's not the highest. The most that we're doing are probably bone mets, because there are some studies out, not recently, but in the last few years, that showed an increased survival rate with stereotactic versus regular external beam. And so our physicians have switched to that on patients that can be. And we have seen patients surviving longer ourselves, and they're coming back for more treatments, for more bone mets. And so that's probably one of the higher areas we treat. We treat a lot of lung also with the C-RAD gating technology piece that has several pieces. We treat a lot, and Elekta combined, of course, and we treat a lot of brain. So probably in that order, you're looking at your bone mets, your lungs, and they could be lung mets or primary lung, depending on the size. And then you're looking at brain, which also can be brain mets or primary brain, again, depending on the size. And then we are treating lymph nodes. We're treating retreatment patients that have had retreat and treated before. And we're trying to get, our margins tight, because it's right next to a pretreated area. There's really not a lot that you can't treat. It's should you treat. In the radiation field, everything is more and more complex all the time. The technology is more complex. The software is complex, software, hardware, all of it. And what it's done is it's allowed us to increase the dose, decrease the margins. So radiobiologically, that should increase our survival rates and our ability to manage the tumor development, which then in course would increase survival rates. So that is our whole goal and what we do in this field. We're even able to treat like 11 tumors at the same time. I mean, it's amazing what you can do with this technology. And that was one of them that we showed, actually, a slide of it at the conference we went to. And This patient had brain meds and had 11 brain meds, and we were able to treat them all at the same time with one isocenter. If you were to try to treat 11 different fields stereotactically, take forever. And historically, people probably would have done a whole brain treatment, which can cause a lot of side effects for the patient. So we were able to treat that and limit the doses just to the 11 brain med areas. Kudos to the physicians and the dosimetrists and physicists on that aspect. I just get to present and say, look how great my team is.
Liz, thank you so much for your comments and your very candid report on the transition from robotic SRS to Linac SRS. I know there's teams out there all around the world who are looking to make similar decisions or even the reverse decision. So it's always nice to see the perspective of the end user when it comes to shifts in technology and again the beautiful report of how your team navigated those waters is so greatly appreciated. For the next portion of our discussion, I'd like to learn a little bit about OCSRI. And first out, we could start with simple. Where are you located?
We are in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we are actually a physician-based practice, like I mentioned before, I think, with a joint venture partnership at one of the local hospitals, John Healthcare, Ascension St. John Healthcare. And so we, like I said, our physicians are the managers, primary owners of the organization. Our main office is actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma, our main building, but we do have a satellite location in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. We do have a breast center located on the St. John, Ascension St. John Hospital and grounds. And we have a skin cancer center located in Medical Office Building in Broken Arrow. So we have four locations in totality because we do have not just radiation oncology, like we talked a lot about, but we have medical oncology, gynecological oncology. Mohs surgeon, breast surgeon, interventional radiologist, diagnostic radiologist, as well as our radiation oncologist. And we have probably 20 physicians and probably a similar number of advanced practitioners. So very large group of practitioners and physicians taking care of our patients and a lot of different, areas for taking care of them in. We have an on-site lab. We have an on-site retail pharmacy. As far as the diagnostic world, we've got on-site in Tulsa. We've got a CT, MRI, PET CT, nuclear medicine. We're doing radiopharmaceutical therapies with Y90, with Pluvicto, Xofigo, Lutathera. We have a large research program. We've just been approved as an NRG site for research. So we'll be an NRG primary site moving forward. We have been a secondary site of NRG off of another hospital's platform, but now we are going to be a main site. So we're looking forward to that with our research program. So we do have a lot to offer patients. Our physician's goal was to just provide a place. I wouldn't say to just. Our physician's goal was to provide a place where patients can go to that they can get everything done that they can possibly get done for their cancer care, other than a hospital stay or something that was unsafe. Like for example, we do biopsies, but we don't do lung biopsies because there's a high risk of pneumothorax with a lung biopsy, and so we don't want to do that here. But we do other biopsies, and we put in our own ports for our patients, and so we do all of those type of things to take care of our patients. We also have a great volunteer program. We have a great patient experience program. We're doing art classes once a month. We're doing yoga for our patients once a month. We have a Talk with the Doc series where patients can come in and learn about a different type of cancer and then have time to talk with the doc and ask questions. We just try to provide everything we possibly can that a patient could need. Social services, nutrition, all of that.
That's impressive. How many patients a year would you say visit your facilities?
So, gosh, I can't say off the top of my head a year, but what I can tell you is between 600 and 700 patients a day come in our door. So, and they're either getting infusion, they're either get, we have a 64-bed infusion suite upstairs. So they're either getting infusion, they're getting an imaging study, they're getting radiation, they're coming to our port draw to get a shot of some sort. Mostly if they're here for the lab, they're going to have another appointment, but they're here for lab, or they're seeing their doctor. So between 600 and 700 of patients a day. As far as radiation new patients a year, it's like about 1500 new patients in radiation side, but I don't know those numbers off the top of my head for the rest of the areas.
So a large patient community served.
Large, we take care. Just like I was saying, we treat 120 to 140 in radiation a day. They do the same, if not more, infusion a day. We do an average of 17 PETs a day, 25 to 30 CTs, 8 MRIs. There's probably about 100 coming through in the imaging side as well every day. So between those two, you've got probably 250, 350. The other 250 are having doctor's appointments, seeing their doctors or their providers, or maybe seeing the nutritionist, the dietitian, or, and usually they see the dietitian or social services when they're already here for another appointment as well. But we do provide that as well. We also like to be involved in the community. We always like to have a team for Komen, the Race for the Cure that happens. We also work with American Cancer Society on the Relay for Life, and we do Light the Night for the LLS Society. And then we have a foundation that our patients can reach out to through the Tulsa Community Foundation called OCS Cares. And that foundation we try to raise money for as well. So our patients can reach out to that foundation for funds to help them through different phases of their treatment.
Such valuable outreach efforts. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, of course. You know how there's just it's more than just the patient, it's the family as a whole
Yes.
that traverses these really scary times, and seeing all the different opportunities OCSRI and your associated facilities take to impact all aspects of the community is really touching.
It's not a job, it's a mission. And I think that probably is something a lot of people in this field think about, is how can we help these patients through the hardest time in their life? But now we get to do some fun things with them too, like we get to ring the bell with them. We have this organization we partner with that they get to pick out a medal, and they wear medals. These people donate their marathon and half marathon medals to this organization. And it's called Medals for Mettle, METTLE. And so they put them on, I don't know, it's not called a necklace, the ribbon. They put them on a ribbon, and you can pick out from this medal stand a medal when they finish their treatment. So we have that for them. And of course, they can ring the bell, and if we have people that come in during their treatment to do hand and foot massages for them. We do therapy dogs. We have therapy dogs come in with them. We just want to love on them.
It's a calling.
It
It's
is.
something that in doing these shows and being a part of the field for the past, I don't know, forever it seems, but you just kind of learn that no matter what part of the field or small corner that you occupy, you find people that just have hearts the size of Texas. On every corner, there's people with so much love just pouring forth, and that's what creates these amazing teams and these amazing functions that are helping those kind of get through these scary places.
It definitely is. That was the word I was trying to find. What you just said was calling. Definitely a calling.
It is. I love it. So for that, it's such an amazing story that your facility has and a community outreach and engagement there. What would you, if you could look back on your beginning pieces as a member of the field, from all of the experience you have in the different parts you've played in Red Onk, if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice, or maybe a listener who's at the beginning stages of their journey, or even a more seasoned member, what piece of advice would you offer the field?
I mean, just in life, I'd say don't take yourself that seriously. I mean, don't take things that seriously. And that work too, right? I mean, it shouldn't be hard to initiate change when it's change for the good, but it is hard. People get set in their ways. I mean, I've been set in my ways too. But I'm also one of the first that says, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. With also knowing I'm not the one that has to do it, right? I'm the one that has to say, let's do it, and has to get approval to get it done, and get approval for the funds and that kind of thing. But I do think that just that was the first thing that at least popped up in my mind, was just not take everything so or yourself so seriously. Definitely take the job seriously. It's definitely be open to change. I mean, something we just talked about today, if we weren't open to change, none of that would have happened.
In a more technical side, I'll pick your brain on this one. When it comes to transitioning from one machine to the next, or implementing change of any kind with a team as a leader of a team, what piece of advice might you offer another administrative professional on the precipice of massive change?
Communication. It is so important. Have the right players involved in the decision making. Have the right players involved in the planning. Have the right players involved in the implementation. And then communicate well with all of those groups.
So communication is definitely key. I greatly appreciate that advice, and I'm certain that our listeners do as well. Is there anything else you would like to discuss or cover regarding OCSRI, your amazing community, your transition, any other parts of life you'd like to chat about?
Well, I don't think much. I would just like to say that I'm very, thankful and blessed to be able to work in this organization. I'm thankful for you all to ask me to have this conversation. I feel like OCSRI is on the forefront of cancer treatment. I don't just believe it. I know it to be true. Our physicians here are amazing, caring individuals. Our staff are amazing, caring individuals. And I know that there's places out there just like us. So I am thankful for the cancer treatment community, that all of us in the country and in the world that are doing this are out there willing to do this, willing to serve our communities this way. It's not just, it is a paycheck. We all need a paycheck, but this is also serving our communities, and it's serving our patients, and it's serving their families. And I feel lucky and blessed that I'm allowed to do that every day.
I know that so many are touched that we don't even realize by you and your team. Every day, every week, every month that passes, the efforts are monumental. And I can't imagine that Tulsa would be better off without OCSRI there.
Absolutely not. We are the best in Tulsa.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. Not only do we take the best care, but we are the nicest, and
Right.
we are all of the above.
I love it. I love it. And I know your community does as well.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. I appreciate you as I've chewed up a ton of your afternoon today, but I'm so grateful for your willingness to take time out of your afternoon in your busy schedule to come and share about your insights regarding transitions of machine, change management, team leadership, and also all the amazing news there from OCSRI. What an amazing conversation we've had. I am so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Hope you have a great day.
Likewise, folks, if you're still hanging out with us, we have had the amazing pleasure of talking with Liz High from OCSRI in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. What a pleasure. We've had a great time having you with us today, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Have a great day.